something if we had political leaders today doing something like that? So there was a great revival among the people of Northumbria. And then Lindisfarne becomes an important base for church planting and preaching and translating or bringing the Bible into the vernacular and also preserving the scriptures like most monasteries did. It's famous for the Lindisfarne Gospels, this illuminated manuscript that's it's in the British Museum or the British Library today, and that can be seen. The monastery is a ruin today because my relatives destroyed it. The Norwegians came and attacked and destroyed the monastery. And the monks, when they fled, they brought with them their treasures, like the Lindisfarne Gospels, the head of Oswald. He eventually died in battle. His head was cut off and people preserved it. And then the body of Cuthbert, who was the most famous monk that lived there. But you can see these ruins today, and it's a bird sanctuary now. It's quite a beautiful island, and we'll walk among these ruins here. We're up in Northumbria, northern England, near the border with Scotland now. And another one who loved the scriptures was Bede. Sometimes we hear him called the Venerable Bede. He was an English monk, and Bede loved the Lord. There's no doubt about that when you read him. And his book, The History of the Church of the English-Speaking People, is a classic of literature and also an important source of information that we have. But again, these guys weren't totally out of it monks that didn't understand the gospel at all. Bede spent his life studying the scriptures, and you see the quote from him there. On his deathbed, he was translating the book of John into the vernacular of the people. Of course, a few centuries later, the Roman Catholic Church is going to put people to death for doing such a thing. But Bede loved the Word of God. And what we can learn from these early Christians, I think especially, also is their sense of eternal things. When Bede was old and sickly, it really hurt him to get out of bed. And, you know, they had chapel seven times a day, right, in the monasteries. Well, this was a huge thing for a sick older man to get to chapel. And one of the monks said to him, you know, Bede, stay in bed. For goodness sakes, God understands you're sick. You don't need to go and you know, get down to chapel. And Bede's response was, well, if I do that, what are the angels going to say? The angels who are worshiping with us in chapel are going to say, where's Bede? Doesn't he think this is important? Isn't he going to add his voice to the praises of God? Well, the Bible tells us that angels are with us in worship, right? We don't often think about that. Bede thought about it so much that it was the first thing he said, well, gosh, if I don't go to chapel, what are the angels going to say about that? We would be much better off to have that kind of attitude about our spiritual life. Well, I'm sorry for the lighting is poor here, but we'll be going to Durham Cathedral because a lot of that history from Lindisfarne was brought over to Durham Cathedral. So if you want to know where Oswald's head is buried, it's in Durham Cathedral. Cuthbert's body and where the Venerable Bede is buried. So the tomb that you see on the right there, the sarcophagus, that's Bede's. And that is in one of the side chapels at Durham Cathedral. Durham Cathedral is my favorite cathedral in Europe. It's a manly cathedral. It doesn't have a lot of flowery stuff like some of these other places do. Here's an aerial shot of Durham Cathedral. This is in northern England. Durham is right up just about an hour drive from the border with Scotland. Very close to Lindisfarne. Okay. These are just some scenes from Durham Cathedral. It's just absolutely magnificent. And one of the cathedrals that was built the quickest of any in Europe. Cuthbert's grave becomes a pilgrimage site through the centuries as Christianity starts to break down from its biblical roots. And during the Reformation, when Henry VIII ordered the dissolution of all these shrines, Cuthbert's shrine was torn down, but his grave is still there. These were full of gold and precious jewels, and Henry took those. It wasn't strictly a religious idea for him. These are the cloisters connected with the Durham Cathedral because it was a monastery. It's a fascinating spot where they built it because a river almost goes completely around it. That's the River Weir. And when we're there, we'll take this beautiful walk. You can see you come down the... I keep pointing to my computer, but you come down from the cathedral, and it looks great on my computer screen, but you guys can't see it. There's a river that's sweeping all the way around, and you cross over that bridge, and you make a walk. And I was reading a book one time, and it said, the river walk at Durham from the cathedral to such and such a bridge was in the top 10 walks in Europe. Well, I don't know about that, but it was it's a beautiful place to be. All right, so we're moving ahead in time. Remember, my theme is the Bible. And John Wycliffe lived in the 1300s, as you know. Of course, we've got Wycliffe Bible translators. So just knowing that, we know that what John Wycliffe is most famous for. But he was a very important pioneer of the Reformation, right? He lives more than a century before the Reformation breaks out. But he is an incredible man with a wonderful story, a love for the Scriptures, and a fearless willingness to stand up to a medieval church that has lost a lot of its roots. He will become, in later life, the pastor of St. Mary's Lutterworth, and we'll visit that. The fascinating thing is that church was built in the early 1200s. So it was 150 years old when Wycliffe was there preaching. And you'll be in the very same sanctuary where he preached the gospel. It's fascinating. And from where a lot of the Lollards went out. Remember, Wycliffe translated the Bible. He didn't know Hebrew. Or much Greek, but he translated the Scriptures with the help of his students into the English of that day, which was against the law. And they went out and began to proclaim that good news, and hundreds were murdered for it. They got the name the Lollards, and I just think it's incredible that we stand in this church that was old when Wycliffe started ministering there. Amazing. And it's a very wonderful place. Wycliffe survives because of the political turmoil in the Roman Catholic Church. They don't have the satisfaction of burning him in his lifetime. But after he dies, there's a council of the church a few years later that orders his body to be exhumed and to be burned after his death. And that happens in this churchyard. His body's dug up, it's burned, and his ashes are thrown in the river nearby so that it won't become any kind of a pilgrimage site. These are some scenes from inside the church, the pulpit, which one of the people that I talked to there one time claimed that was from Wycliffe's time. I'm sure it's not, but it makes for an interesting story. And then there's these murals painted on the wall that were there at the time of Wycliffe. That brings us to other sites. The interesting thing about a tour like this is there's many layers. You go to one place, you learn about this person, and then you go to another place where this person also ministered, or you go to where they were put on trial or where they were put to death. And the story kind of interweaves, and it starts to become more clear over time. But Wycliffe was an academician. He was a professor at Balliol College in Oxford. So we'll visit that college, and he inspired his students to go on to do this work of Bible translation and to preach the gospel. They brought the gospel to many, many people in the land. Okay, I want to keep moving here. Anybody recognize what that is? St. Paul's Cathedral. St. Paul's Cathedral is hard to get an angle on because there's all these big buildings that have been built up around it. But that's St. Paul's in London. And the trial for Wycliffe, one of his trials, was held at St. Paul's. And maybe you've heard of the earthquake synod, where they don't have many earthquakes in Britain, thankfully, or a lot of this old stuff wouldn't be standing. But there was an earthquake during this synod. And the supporters of Wycliffe said, aha, that's God angry that you're trying this righteous and good man. And then his enemies said, aha, that's God saying, yes, absolutely, let's get rid of this bum. Okay. Well, the Coventry martyrs, we're not actually going to see their site, but just what was involved at this time, these people were burnt to death because they taught their children the Ten Commandments and the Apostles' Creed and the Lord's Prayer in English. That's why they were burned at the stake. And this, of course, is happening in the very earliest days of the Reformation. And that takes us to Thomas Bilney and Hugh Latimer. A few years ago, I taught a short Sunday school class where I went into the details about Bilney and Latimer, two very critical figures in the Reformation. And, of course, we put our roots back to the Reformation in Germany and in England. Mike? A short one that might be easily for the person in the pew? I think it would. I have a book that's coming out in a month, and Mike is giving me a little plug there. That's the kind of question I like. It reminds me, Dr. Rogland, who was one of our founding teachers at Covenant High School, one time the students had asked him, you know, what's a question that you wish students had asked? Had asked you when he was going to retire, and his answer was, I wish students had asked me the question, how can I monetarily reward you for the kind of teaching that you've done? Okay. No student has ever asked me that either. Cambridge University is going to be the center of the English Reformation, and it's going to center around that little guy, Thomas Bilney. But we'll be able to see some of these colleges where these men studied, and Bilney was at Trinity Hall, and you can see Latimer there at Clare College. And Cranmer, who's going to become an important figure of the Reformation, eventually the Archbishop, studied at Jesus College. So Cambridge is famous for being the hotbed of the Reformation. The Lord used these relatively young men to bring the gospel and to bring the English Bible to the British world. The Thomas Bilney was converted by secretly buying a copy of Erasmus's Greek New Testament. Erasmus had, remember, that was important in Martin Luther's movement in Germany. Erasmus had written this Greek New Testament. Well, in Britain, they thought, we don't want that, because we see what happens when people start reading the Bible in the original. They get all kinds of ideas that the church doesn't want them to have. And so it was against the law to have the Greek New Testament, even for scholars in... obviously, that's not going to affect everyday people. They don't even know how to read English, much less Greek. But they were fearful of what this would lead to, and so it was against the law. And so Bilney went, and he describes the scene of just how scared he was to go to this house and knock on the back door and buy a copy of the Greek New Testament. And he was saved the afternoon he brought it home. He started reading in 1 Timothy, and when he realized that Paul called himself the chief of sinners, he realized, hey, this is all by grace. If Paul is the chief of sinners and is saved, then certainly I can be saved. And then he starts to teach other people what he'd learned in his rooms there at Trinity Hall. Students come, and pretty soon scores of people are being converted. His ideas are viewed as Lutheran or German ideas, and he is an outcast in the university. And his biggest critic was this staunch priest and professor named Hugh Latimer. And Hugh Latimer would go around and tell people, don't listen to Bilney. He'd interrupt other professors who had imbibed this reform thing and say, don't listen to this guy, he's a heretic, and so on. And then Bilney leads Latimer to faith in Christ. I'm going to come back to this church, but I want to show you Great St. Mary's. We'll visit Great St. Mary's Church on the main street there in Cambridge. And Latimer gave a sermon in Great St. Mary's where all the students and all the professors came, and Bilney was sitting there. And it was a sermon about how terrible the German Reformation is and how horrible these little vermin, he didn't name Bilney by name, but these little vermin who are in Cambridge trying to spread these same ideas about the gospel. Well, Bilney was taking this all in, and he said, you know, I was just like that. I had zeal without knowledge. And so he decided he was going to go and lead Latimer to the Lord, or at least share with him. But he also realized he could be killed for doing that, because Latimer was really the champion of the church there in the university. And I've told this story before, but Bilney comes up with the idea of asking Latimer to hear his confession. Bilney was a all these guys were priests, most of them. They're priests, they're professors. Latimer was a priest. So he knocks on Latimer's door and he says, Master Latimer, would you hear my confession? And so Latimer thinks, Bilney, the biggest troublemaker in the university, heard my sermon. It's finally clear to him. And so Bilney says, Master Latimer, hear my confession, and I will tell you what I have learned, and you straighten me out where I'm in error. And he basically just said, you know, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I got a Greek New Testament. I read, and then he just gave his testimony. And by the end, Latimer said he'd learned more in that few minutes of Bilney's confession than in all of his years of studying the churchmen, the medieval scholastics. So they become best buddies and begin to lead many other people to Christ. And, of course, Latimer being converted was like Paul. You know, everybody was afraid of Latimer. Now he is preaching the gospel. And Bilney was a timid guy. Latimer was not. I need to go back a few pictures here and take us to this little church. It's on a little side street off of the main street in Cambridge, and you would never really know it's there. There's just buildings around. It's one of the most important little churches in all of the English-speaking world. It's St. Edward the Martyr Church. And in that church, Bilney started to proclaim the gospel. Latimer, even more so, was preaching there. Some of the other reformers that came out of Cambridge preached there, got into trouble, were arrested, and so forth. And we'll go and see that that place. And I need to keep moving because I'm going to get nowhere near done here. That's the inside of St. Andrew's. And that's the pulpit that Latimer preached from. That is an original. And then we've talked about Great St. Mary's. That's the interior of Great St. Mary's. Tyndale and Frith are two more men from, and by the way, Thomas Cranmer is also at Cambridge, and he gets converted during this time. You know, these men would meet at the White Horse Inn. Probably heard of that, right? There's a radio program called the White Horse Inn based on that idea. We'll see the site where the White Horse Inn was. It's not there anymore. But the students derisively called that Little Germany, and they called Heretic Hill, where Latimer and Bilney would walk up this hill, and so on. So these guys were marked men. Tyndale gets saved, probably at Cambridge, and he actually went to Oxford for his undergraduate work, and when we go to Oxford, we'll see his college. This is a famous Bridge of Sighs, kind of taken from a Venice scene, that is at Hereford College there. But King's College, Cambridge, is where John Frith went to school. People know of William Tyndale. They don't know very much about John Frith, but he was a wonderful man of the Lord. He gets converted at Cambridge. He's brought to Oxford to help teach at a new college there, the Cardinal's College. And when it becomes clear what they're doing, they arrest these 10 students who came from Cambridge. They put them in a dungeon cell of one of the colleges, and four of the men die down there under these horrible conditions. And Frith was one of these imprisoned guys. He's released. He flees to Europe and learns more about the gospel and links up with Tyndale, and he helps Tyndale translate the scriptures and all, and they become absolutely best friends. Tyndale said that he was the godliest man he'd ever met. But Frith had a burden to preach the good news to the people in England, and Tyndale said, no, don't go back there. You cannot go back there. And Frith just felt compelled. So he slipped back into England, started teaching little Bible studies, got caught, was tried at St. Paul's Cathedral, was imprisoned at the Tower of London. These are all places we're going to go, and we'll talk about their story as we go. And eventually, he's burned at the stake for his faith. An absolutely godly man that that you should know more about. But this is what he said. I must be true to my conscience when he was on trial. Although I should lose my life 20 times over, I can support my teaching from the Holy Scripture and the ancient fathers of the church. God help me. Cranmer, at this time, was an influential churchman. He was the Archbishop of Canterbury. He'd been made so by Henry VIII. And these stories are too complicated to get into now. But Cranmer did not want Frith arrested. So Cranmer planned to have some of his men walk Frith from where he was imprisoned to some place where Cranmer was going to interrogate him, ask him questions. Of course, Cranmer agreed with a lot of what Frith taught, maybe not everything this time. So as they were walking along, Cranmer's men said to him, oh, by the way, take off, run away, and we'll give you 3 or 4 hours head start. You run south, we'll tell people you ran north, and then you get out of here. And Frith said, No, I'm not going to do that. We said, well, you fled before. You spent time over there. Go, save your life. Cranmer doesn't want to have to follow through with this stuff. And Frith was absolutely convinced that if he did that, the gospel would be marred. That people would say, oh, these reformers are just chicken. They're not willing to suffer for their faith. And so they said, okay, we're walking away. We're walking away. And they start hightailing it out of there. Okay, and Frith is jogging alongside them, saying, I'm coming with you, and if you lose me, I'm going to show up where I'm supposed to be, and I'm going to say, hey, Frith has been found. So he was determined to give his life for the Lord, and he did. That's the college chapel where Tyndale, by the way, Tyndale was just totally heartbroken when he got word that Frith had been burned at the stake. So two of his close friends, Bilney and Frith, were both burned while he was there. And he understood that he very well could be as well. Lambeth Palace is where they held Frith. That's in London. That stained glass window to the left there is one that shows Tyndale in the middle, and then all the most famous Bible translators, including Luther and into German and so on that stained glass window. We'll see the Tower of London, where a lot of these people were imprisoned. Oh, my goodness, I'm losing time here. I'm going to keep moving along. There's the Tower of London is really a series of towers where a lot of these people were imprisoned. Thomas Bilney was thrown in prison there. Bilney, by the way, recanted twice and just felt horrible about it. And then eventually just went out and started preaching openly and passing out Tyndale's English New Testament. They captured him and he was burned at the stake in Norwich. But Latimer Ridley Cranmer, Frith, Anne Askew, maybe some of you have read about the Anne Askew, this woman who died for holding Reformation principles in the time of Henry VIII. This is St. John the Evangelist Chapel that is in the White Tower, in the Tower of London. I remember being standing there with Ken, and Ken's an architect. And he stood there saying, this is just absolutely amazing. How did they do this in the midst of this space and all? A beautiful place of worship there. The Bloody Tower is where it's believed the bishop martyrs were held before they were put on trial in Oxford. So again, all these places start to interweave. These guys are saved at Cambridge, put to death in Oxford, so that gives rise to the famous jingle, Cambridge grew them and Oxford slew them, of the reformers. But so we'll see a variety of sites that overlap where these who these guys are. Of course, we'll see Westminster Abbey, where the monarchs are crowned in Britain today, right there in the heart of the Parliament Square. These are just all scenes from there. The Westminster Confession of Faith was written there, as well as the translation of the King James Bible, or good chunks of it. That's Henry VII Chapel. That's where they met for the first several months to write the Westminster Confession of Faith, a process that took 4 or 5 years. And eventually they would move to the Jerusalem Chamber, which they don't let us go into anymore. This is a scene from when Elizabeth was crowned back in the 1950s. But in my mind, one of my favorite rooms in the place is the chapter house. The chapter house is where the monks would gather to read a chapter from the Rule of St. Benedict. And the chapter house has a famous history in Britain. The Parliament sat there for almost 100 years at one point. And it's this magnificent, very unusual room, but it's where Bilney was tried. And I love being in that space and just thinking about Bilney standing for the faith, but then eventually recanting. He had to carry his bundle of sticks to St. Paul's as penance that's the outside of Westminster. You can see there aren't statues, right? This is a Reformation. This is a Reformation-affected country, so its old cathedrals loses its statue of saints. When you go to France or Italy, those places all have the saints there. But again, St. Paul's, there's all this overlap with Frith's trial and so much more history. On the backside of St. Paul's Cathedral is St. Paul's Cross, where they used to preach to massive crowds of people. It's also where the Bishop of London made his proclamation. So when Tyndale's New Testament was condemned and burned, it was burned right there at St. Paul's Cross. And when Tyndale heard about it over in Flanders, he said, they're going to burn me one day too. And that's where Bilney had to stand with his a load of sticks on his back saying, if you fall again, we're burning you with those very sticks. And he heard had to stand and hear a message against the Reformation. He was so heartbroken by that, but I've got to stop talking about Bilney because we're running out of time. That's the inside of St. Paul's. We're going to go to Bunhill Fields, where the dissenters, people that came outside of the Church of England, were buried because they were gross. They were disgusting people that couldn't be buried in consecrated ground in a Church of England churchyard. So they were buried out in a field outside of town. And John Bunyan is buried there, Isaac Watts, John Wesley's mother, and other famous Puritans, John Owen being the most famous. Here's Covenant High School students around Bunyan's grave there. Bunyan's grave was mostly destroyed or significantly destroyed in the bombings of World War II. And so that's why that looks to be in better shape than some of the others. It was fixed up. John Wesley's chapel is right across the street, and we'll see where he preached. His home is there, and all. And St. Mary the Virgin is where the trial was held. And I'm going to stop here because I've asked Ross if he would come up and just say a few words about his time when we took an adult tour like this in 2001. So, Ross, can you come up? And did you remember, Ross? I didn't send him an email reminder this week, but just asking Ross to share his thoughts about what it was like to go on the tour 12 years ago now, 2001.
12 years, my goodness. I think we can safely say that Elder Hanula has a good feel for church history in England. And I'm just one of a group of 32 that accompanied the tour those 12 years ago in England. And when we started out, I was kind of interested in seeing. I had been to some of these places before, but I thought I'd get a new perspective on it. And I did. When we took off from SeaTac Airport on British Airways jet, one of the first things they did was hand us a menu. And I brought a copy of that menu because I don't think they do it anymore. But, you know, they say an army travels on its stomach, and I think tourists do too. And we started out with a prawn cocktail with fresh lemon. And then we had our choice of lemon pepper chicken with paprika-dusted potatoes and seasonable vegetables, or cheese and spinach ravioli gratiné with tomato herb sauce, and finished off with vanilla ice cream or caramel and walnut tart, and then later on, cheddar cheese, crackers, and butter. So I thought, this is going to be a pretty good trip. And it just got better. We landed in London and were immediately transported to Westminster Abbey, and that's where things started to kind of change for me. It wasn't just an interest, but you know, when you're in the building and in the same room where the Westminster divines met and debated and settled on the Westminster Confession of Faith, and then you hear some of the stories on how they arrived at the conclusions that they did, it was just it really had an impact on me, and I really appreciated that. And then we left there and went up to, I won't take all the stops. We spent the weekend in Cambridge, and Ardith and I stayed in the home of one of Ian Hamilton's elders, Peter and Heather Leverton. Leverton, yeah, that was it. And gracious people. And I think one of the highlights of the trip was being able to worship with those folks in Cambridge. And then the second weekend, we worshiped in New Mills at the church there. And, of course, Angus Steele, who is one of our close friends and spoke at one of Covenant High School's commencements, is an officer in that church. And it was really interesting. So when you go to places like Elstow, where John Bunyan was raised and where his life and testimony reside, and then you hear Dick telling some of these anecdotes that he's shared with us this morning, it gives you an impact on what the life of these Christians, how they lived, why they lived, and it helps to strengthen your own faith. It was just a real revelation to me. And then, of course, we went on up to St. Andrews and got to stand around the grave of Samuel Rutherford and got to sing The Sands of Time Are Sinking. And when you do that, why, you get a real personal feel for how these people lived, what their life was like, and not only an interesting trip, but a real impact on your own Christian faith.
All right. Well, next week, thank you, Ross. Next week, we will talk a little bit more about some other sites we'll see, and then get and focus on Scotland as well. I didn't think Ross was going to tell us about the menu on the plane. I had forgotten about that. You don't see menus like that anymore. All right. Thank you. We'll talk more next week.